Is the QE3 about to set sail from Jackson Hole, Wyoming?
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From APM in New York, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. And if you heard Mitt Romney's speech last night, you heard a lot about how weak our economic recovery is. Well, today we might get some clues about whether the Federal Reserve is going to do something about it. Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke is set to give a big speech at an economic conference in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, a place with just a little bit of Fed history, as Marketplace's Mark Garrison reports.
It wasn't always this way. Riverfront Investment Group's Rod Smith says the annual gathering used to interest only hardcore policy wonks. But in 2010, Bernanke used his speech there to signal QE2, the Fed's big move to push down interest rates. Now, Smith says, people expect big news out of the little Wyoming lodge.
He sort of made it, for better or worse, a rather different venue, so there's a set of expectations build up every time we come to Jackson Hole.
But don't expect anything huge, like a blockbuster announcement of QE3, says Cass Business School professor Peter Hahn.
I just don't see any big announcements, particularly with the election looming. I don't think the Fed, and particularly Bernanke, wants to be seen as partisan. And frankly, doing anything will put you on one side or the other.
Also, the Fed has already hinted at more stimulus in the minutes of its last meeting, but anything can happen in the clean air of that mountain valley, so investors are again looking west for clues. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
Well, as the Republican National Convention wraps up in Tampa, the Democratic National Convention is about to start up in Charlotte. But before we let this week in politics go by, we're going to talk about one line of attack from the Romney campaign that's gotten a bit of attention.
President Obama quietly announced a plan to gut welfare reform by dropping work requirements. Under Obama's plan, you wouldn't have to work and wouldn't have to train for a job. They just send you your welfare check. And welfare to work goes back to being plain old welfare.
That ad has been called false by independent fact checkers. Marketplace economics correspondent Chris Farrell joins us now for a little history lesson. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, Chris, let's start with the facts here. I mean, what is the welfare work requirement exactly?
Okay, so in 1996, with the Welfare Reform Act, it really changed the way we give assistance to the neediest families. And the core of the change was the work requirement. And there are a number of definitions of what counts as work. So a job would be a classic, right? But there's also job training, internship, taking classes. This is the type of thing that comes under the work requirement.
And if you do those things, then you can get the assistance from the government.
Right. You get the assistance from the government. But again, all the pressure is, let's get you prepared for work. Let's get a job. That requirement is a federal mandate. That requirement cannot be waived.
Okay. So what about this charge that President Obama came in and weakened the work requirement for welfare?
Okay. Let me make it really simple, Jeremy. The answer to that is no. So you have all these political fact checkers, and they have, you know, various standards. So one is pants on fire. One is four Pinocchios.
Yeah.
Fact check says wrong. Maybe ours would be four Angry Birds, something like that. I mean, look, what the administration said is we'll consider proposals from states if you have a better way to get welfare recipients into jobs. So, you know, it's a classic case, the states acting as laboratories of innovation. And back in 2005, you know, Romney was governor of Massachusetts. He joined 28 other governors, and they wrote a letter to Congress saying, you know, come on, you guys are considering an overhaul of welfare law. You know, give us more flexibility. We want that. That's what governors want, and this is what governors do.
But Chris, isn't the reason that this is playing with at least a certain portion of the population that people are frustrated that the federal government is still having to send out checks to so many people so long after the recession began?
Look, there is a whole debate that's going on. Just as you're saying, you know, if you look at the increase in food stamps, the increase in people who are taking unemployment insurance. And then so there is this genuine concern. But when it comes to the welfare work requirement, all I'm saying here is, you know, Jeremy, you'd be shocked, shocked that it's politics at play, not economics and not facts.
Marketplace economics correspondent Chris Farrell, thanks as always.
Thank you.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are mixed in overseas trading this morning, down 0.33% in Hong Kong, up 0.5% in Frankfurt. The unemployment rate across the Eurozone remained at 11.3% last month. That is the same as it was in June, but up more than 1% from a year ago. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow fell 106 points to close at 13,000 exactly.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to FreakonomicsRadio.com.
This weekend, Howard University and Morehouse College face off in the Nation's Football Classic. The annual game honors historically black colleges and universities, but it comes at a time when many are struggling to stay afloat. Amy Scott reports from the Marketplace Education Desk at WYPR in Baltimore.
Last week, Morris Brown College in Atlanta filed for bankruptcy after decades of financial turmoil. It's one of more than 100 historically black colleges in the country. Mary Beth Gassman with the University of Pennsylvania says several smaller schools are struggling with debt and declining enrollment.
The majority of them are enrolling low-income, first-generation, sometimes underprepared students. That's part of their historic mission. And when you do that, it is harder to retain students.
The economy has hurt many colleges without large endowments or alumni support. John Wilson directs the White House Initiative on Historically Black Colleges and Universities.
That's what's happening at a lot of institutions, not just black institutions. And it is causing a lot of stress.
Last week, the oldest junior college in Texas, Lon Morris, canceled its fall semester after filing for bankruptcy last month. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
And finally to Toledo, Ohio, where Holly Stewart lost her job about a year ago and has been looking ever since. So far, no luck. So according to Toledo News Now, her husband Brandon decided to step in by putting up a billboard that says, "Please hire my wife." It's got Holly's picture on it and some experience bullet points and an email address for potential employers to see, hiremywife@yahoo.com. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.